Headlines: Tehran says the IAEA's recent anti-Iran resolution was politically motivated and aimed at mounting pressure on the Islamic Republic. The Hamas movement calls on the UN to put Israel, on its annual list of shame over the regime's violations against Palestinian children. Also ahead, Ukraine rejects the West's proposal to hold peace talks with Russia, saying it will give Moscow time to mobilize its forces for a bigger offensive. Our top story: Tehran has described as politically motivated a recent anti-Iran resolution adopted by the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says the resolution is also aimed at piling up pressure on the Islamic Republic. But Tehran, according to Kanani, will never give in to such a pressure campaign. He stressed that Iran has the most transparent nuclear program in the world. The spokesman added Tehran will continue its peaceful nuclear activities based on its needs and under its commitments to international treaties. On Thursday, the IAEA adopted a draft resolution submitted by the US, Britain, France and Germany over what they claimed was Tehran's lack of cooperation with the agency. Iran's foreign ministry has summoned the UK ambassador to Tehran over a recent assault by a violent mob on the country's embassy in London. The foreign ministry expressed anger at what it called the inability of the British police in preventing such a deplorable attack. The ministry reminded the British envoy about his country's responsibility in protecting diplomatic missions based on the Vienna Conventions. Tehran's reaction came after a group attacked the embassy building in London and desecrated the Islamic Republic of Iran's flag. The British ambassador, for his part, expressed regret over the incident, saying he will convey Tehran's protest to London. The diplomat expressed hope that such incidents would not happen again in the future. The Iranian president says the United States, France, and several other European countries are blatantly supporting terrorists and rioters. Ebrahim Raisi warned that their backing for terrorists will definitely not be in their interests. The president said Iran's enemies have resorted to a combined war to disrupt the country's progress by targeting its security, its economy, and its production. He instructed the Iranian Foreign Ministry to adopt the necessary measures through diplomatic and legal channels to thwart and counter acts of sedition orchestrated outside the country. He also touched upon anti-Iran propaganda campaign by foreign media using fake news and false narratives related to the recent events in Iran. The president urged domestic media and relevant bodies to disseminate the information precisely, transparently, and promptly. Iran's leader has said that Washington has always been at the forefront of the anti-Iran campaign, and its European allies are standing behind it. Iran's foreign minister has also blasted both the US and EU for fueling the riots in Iran, saying this amounts to spreading violence and terrorism.
Security services, the fake Israeli regime, and certain Western politicians that have engineered plots to spark a civil war, destroy and break up Iran, must know that Iran is neither Libya nor Sudan. That was what Iran's foreign minister tweeted recently. Abdullahian said that Iran's enemies have their eyes set on Iran's territorial integrity and identity, accusing Israel and Western intelligence services of plotting to start civil war in the Islamic Republic. The statements were confirmed by a leaked audio from a presenter at UK's state-funded news channel, BBC Persian.
کشورهای منطقه ایران دموکراتیک که نمیخوان. اگه ایران دموکراتیک بشه، جنبش زنان را بیفتن، حقوقشون رو بگیرن، اولین جایی که وحشت میکنه عربستانه.
Abdullahian had good reason to relay those sentiments. The statements came on the heels of a number of terrorist attacks in the Islamic Republic. One took place in Izeh, in the southwestern province of Khuzestan, killing 7 people, including a 9-year-old boy and woman. The other took place in Isfahan, in which terrorists attacked security forces and killed 3 of them. There's a vicious anti-Iran media campaign led by terrorist media outlets like the Saudi-funded Iran International, which are twisting the truth and are accusing Iranian security forces of committing the terrorist acts. This stage of the anti-Iran plot is called an armed one, something that the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton warned about. He claimed that subversive elements in Iran, which he dubbed as the opposition, were arming themselves with weapons stolen from besieged forces and smuggled from Iraq's Kurdistan. This was evident when an uptick in the number of security forces killed were reported during 3 days, from November 15th through November 18th. During this period, 14 security forces were reported to have been victims of terrorist attacks. The terrorist killings in Izeh, Isfahan, and Mashhad, which followed a recent similar attack against pilgrims and worshippers at the shrine of Shah Cheragh in Shiraz, also showed that the enemy plots have failed, and they are now subscribing to terrorist acts involving firearms and weapons.
Iran's leader has said that the enemy is trying to destroy hope among not only the people and the youth, but also the officials. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says the enemy's followers inside Iran are also trying to instill hopelessness and despair by using the media and cyberspace.
Iran has blasted the silence of the international community over the recent terrorist attacks. It blamed foreign powers for promoting and encouraging violence and terrorism. Further said that their silence is testament to that, saying undoubtedly the international silence of claimants of human rights and foreign promoters of chaos and violence in Iran in the face of the most blatant terrorist operations in a number of Iranian cities conveys no other message than encouragement of terrorism and the promotion of terrorism across the world. The Iranian city of Mashhad. Funeral processions were held for 3 besieged volunteer force members who were stabbed to death by rioters earlier this week. The turnout in the tens of thousands. Iran's leader has stated that they are trying to give the impression that large numbers of people are opposed to the Islamic establishment in order to impress ignorant individuals. However, the leader noted that the people's mass presence on stage to safeguard the Islamic revolution amounts to a slap in the face of ill-wishers. That became even more evident when the following day in Isfahan, again people showed up in large numbers, tens of thousands, to pay their last respects to the victims while condemning all acts of violence and terror. Putting these scenes next to each other, there is no comparison. The Saudi-funded Iran International depiction of what is happening in Iran is far from reality, to the point that the channel, which Iran has named a terrorist entity, is actively promoting and encouraging not only acts of violence, but is under the delusional impression that there is a revolution underway in Iran. The scenes, when put next to each other, speak for themselves.
Reports coming out of Iraq say a missile attack has hit the country's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. According to local sources, 4 missiles targeted the headquarters of the so-called Democratic Party of the Iranian Kurdistan in Khoi Sanjak district of the region. At the same time, the headquarters of the anti-Iran Kamala Party near the city of Soleimaniyah came under drone attacks. Following the incidents, sirens went off at the U.S. Embassy in the city of Erbil. Some local sources say the attacks have so far killed over 2 dozen terrorists based in the Iraqi Kurdistan region. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the United Nations to put Israel on its list of shame, which deals with violations of children's rights in armed conflicts. In a statement issued on the World's Children's Day, Hamas urged the UN and international human rights groups to protect Palestinian children against Israel's violations and terrorism. The movement warned about, quote, the most heinous forms of war crimes perpetrated by the Israeli regime against Palestinian kids. According to Hamas, over 35 Palestinian children have been killed by Israeli forces so far this year. 160 others are being subjected to different forms of psychological and physical torture while languishing in Israeli jails. The UN has already defied calls to add Israel to its annual list of shame. Syria says a number of its army forces have been killed in Turkish airstrikes in the north of the country. A Syrian military source said the casualties were inflicted during raids in the Hasaka and Aleppo provinces. Damascus has not provided any figures, but a UK-based monitoring group affiliated to Syrian opposition said 12 army members were killed. It added that 18 members of the Syrian Kurdish-led forces and one journalist were also among the dead, taking the overall toll to 31. The Kurdish forces have warned that the attack won't go unanswered. Turkey says it launched the strikes against PKK and YPG, Kurdish militants in Iraq and Syria, in retaliation for last week's deadly bombing in Istanbul. The Kurdish militants have denied any involvement in the explosion. Turkey has launched three major cross-border operations in Syria since 2016. It already controls some territory in the country's north. Now, Russia accuses Ukraine of shelling the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant as 15 explosions rocked the facility in under 24 hours.
The Kiev regime does not stop its provocations aimed at creating the threat of a man-made catastrophe at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. On November 19th, the artillery of the armed forces of Ukraine fired 11 large-caliber artillery shells on the territory of the nuclear power plant. On the morning of November 20th, Ukrainian troops fired twice at the territory of the nuclear power plant.
The spokesman said the missiles were fired around the power lines supplying the plant. Konashenkov added that no radiation leak has been detected. Shortly after, the Ukrainian Nuclear Energy Agency said it was Russia who was behind the explosions. The International Atomic Energy Agency chief condemned the attacks and demanded an immediate end. Rafael Grossi called the shelling extremely disturbing. Zaporizhia is Europe's largest nuclear power plant. The facility has been under Russian control since March. It has come under repeated shelling, with each side blaming the other. During our news review program, we discuss the global ramifications of the Russia-Ukraine war.
Okay, let's see what the situation is like and talk about it a little bit. So joining me is John Amitter, our correspondent in Donetsk, Ukraine, and also Christoph Herstel joining me from Berlin. He's an author and politician. So, Johnny, let's begin with you. So it's a natural thing when Kiev is making, you know, gains on the battlefront. Why should they consider holding talks? Tell us about the latest regarding the battlefield.
Well, yes, these comments coming out of Ukraine do make sense. They recently had a major success taking back Kherson. Of course, it's understandable why, in a military sense, why Russia have withdrawn to the other side of the Dnepro River. The river there making a very good defensive barrier, an defensive barrier for both sides. So now both sides are able to move troops from that region to other regions in Ukraine. Right now, I've heard that Ukraine is amassing a large force, 20,000 or 40,000 troops in the Zaporizhia region, where they may well plan to strike out at the major settlement of Melitopol. To the east of that, it's the Russians that have been making some gains in the Ugledar direction, Then you've got the front line up in the north of Donbass around Bakhmut or Artemovsk in Russia, where Russia has been trying to take for some time now. So the front line fluctuating around there. Ukraine also keen to make advances before winter sets in, and also before the rest of these 300,000 mobilized Russian troops make it to the battlefield. Reports that over 80,000 have already arrived, but when they do, we can expect Russia may well launch a major offensive themselves. So Ukraine and NATO are very keen to make another major success before winter, which may well strengthen their hand at the negotiating table if and when that ever does come.
Now, Christoph, given the situation and what's happening on the ground, where are we moving to?
We are certainly moving towards an escalation, because that is what the ruling Washingtonian deep state wants. That is, in fact, a difference in strategies that leads to a organized withdrawal from the right side of the Dnipro River in Kherson. So it was not that the Ukrainian army has, you know, taken Kherson by storm, but the Russians have withdrawn quickly and taken as many civilians as possible with them and left some on the other side. So what we have here that we face now, that the Nazis, the Nazi activists in the Ukrainian army are harassing these Russians left under their command area. And that is a showcase Moscow is now pointing towards the world, how Ukrainian people, Ukrainian Nazis are treating Russians. That is a long story going back to 2014 after the CIA organized Maidan coup d'etat. So this is just the, you know, predecessor situation. Russia needs to stage a major offensive, which will come if Kiev doesn't give in. Putin has been very, very clear on this from the first day, from February 21 and 24, in his speeches, that if Ukraine doesn't give in, the war will get stronger and Russia will, you know, leash out stronger at Kiev. That is going to happen.
Appreciate your comments and insight. Jana Miller in Donetsk, Ukraine, and Christoph Herzl in Berlin.
Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. Britain and France have signed a landmark £63 million deal to stop migrants crossing the Channel. The deal would include a 40% increase in officers patrolling French beaches. But British MPs fear it does not go far enough. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Thank you. The British newspaper The Sun has more for us. A landmark £63 million deal with France to help tackle illegal migration has been hailed by Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, and he plans to deepen ties in the months ahead. The Prime Minister says only by working with other countries can you make progress. In a broadside at Liz Truss, who angered the French with her friend or foe comment. The agreement will see a huge increase in the number of police officers patrolling the beaches in northern France to stop the vessels leaving French beaches. But while adamant overall migration numbers will fall, Rishi Sunak could not guarantee this would happen next year. The Prime Minister declared the pact could go further in the coming months, as British officers will be embedded with their counterparts in control rooms in the initial stages. His comments come after he met French leader Emmanuel Macron last week at the COP27 conference in Egypt to tackle the problem head-on, as the number of people crossing the channel hit 40,000. Britain's Home Secretary Suella Braverman travelled to France to finalise the deal when she met the country's Interior Minister Gerald Darmanin. The Prime Minister made a thinly veiled comment aimed at Liz Truss, who caused fury in Paris over the summer when she said the jury was out whether or not President Macron was a close ally, putting any deal in jeopardy. Speaking as he travelled to the G20 summit in Indonesia, Rishi Sunak said, "Only by working with other countries can you make progress on things that impact people at home. The best example of that is illegal migration, and I raised it in my first meeting I had with President Macron. We spent time speaking about that when we were together in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt at the COP27 summit. I'm pleased we're signing a new deal with the French. The highlights are a 40% increase in patrols happening, and for the first time, British officials embedded in French operations to strengthen coordination and the effectiveness of our operation. But that is not the end of our cooperation, and the agreement should be a foundation for even greater cooperation in the months ahead. The deal with France will also see more investment in port security to stop illegal entry into lorries, with the beefing up of surveillance and more closed-circuit television cameras. Drones and night vision capabilities will also be used as nearby countries, including Belgium and Holland, are brought into help with the crackdown. A new task force between Britain and France will be established that will be focusing on reducing the numbers of Albanians and organised criminal gangs exploiting the migration routes. Cash will also be set aside for reception and removal centres in France for those whose journeys are prevented, to stop them attempting the perilous journey again. Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said, "I'm confident that we can get the numbers down, but I also want to be honest with people, and it isn't a single thing that will magically solve this. We can't do it overnight. But people should be absolutely reassured that this is a top priority for me. I'm gripping it, and as I've said, in the time that I've been Prime Minister, you're already starting to see more progress with this deal with the French, but that's just a start. There's a lot more that we need to do." Rishi Sunak added, "When it comes to migration more generally, I do think that the absolute priority that the British people have right now, as I do, is to grip illegal migration." British newspaper The Telegraph has more for us. The new £63 million channel deal between Britain and France provoked a backlash on Monday after it emerged it will not enable migrants to be deported back to France. The agreement, signed by Britain's Home Secretary Suella Braverman and her French counterpart Gerald Darmanin in Paris, will involve the UK paying for a 40% rise in French officers deployed on French beaches, British officers stationed in French control rooms, and extra drones, night vision goggles, and other surveillance equipment. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak hailed it as a critical agreement in getting a grip on illegal migration in small boats, and said he was confident the number of illegal migrants would come down. However, Rishi Sunak declined to guarantee that numbers would fall by next year. Home Secretary Suella Braverman, who was due to make a statement on the deal to the House of Commons on Monday afternoon, said the deal represented real wins, although she admitted there was no silver bullet and no quick fix. However, Downing Street declined to say whether the government had pursued a returns agreement with France to tackle migrants crossing as part of the deal. A number 10 Downing Street spokesman said, "I wouldn't comment on conversations and the development of policy. This is a significant deal which will build on the already significant cooperation that we have with the French." The Prime Minister recognises the scale of the challenge and that internationally we need to work together to tackle what is a global challenge. Just 21 migrants out of a total of 16,000 considered for removal from January of 2021 to June of this year had been returned to safe countries through which they have travelled and where they should have claimed asylum. Experts have blamed the collapse of the Dublin return agreement following Brexit. Downing Street also admitted there were no targets for outcomes in the deal, raising questions over how the success and value for money of the deal will be measured. Asked if there were targets for outcomes, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's spokesman said, "There is the deal as set out, but no, there is no target." Suella Braverman has said she wants the proportion of migrants stopped from leaving French shores to double from around 40% to 70 to 80% in order to break the economic model of people smugglers. The French Interior Ministry on Monday insisted it had increased the proportion to 56% from 42%, with more than 30,000 stopped so far this year. However, a total of 41,738 people have reached Britain this year, including 1,825 last Saturday. That is 40% more than the figure of 28,500 for the whole of last year. Rishi Sunak said, "I want to be honest with people, and that isn't a single thing that will magically solve this problem. We can't do it overnight. But people should be absolutely reassured that this is a top priority for me. I'm gripping it, and as I've said, in the time that I've been Prime Minister, you're already starting to see some progress with this deal with the French, but that's just a start. There's lots more that we need to do." However, Conservative MPs and Border Force officers warned that the agreement did not go far enough and would not stop the surge in migrants. Natalie Elphick, the Tory MP for Dover in Kent, said the agreement falls short of what is needed and amounted to more of the same rather than a radical new approach.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the leader of Islamic Ummah, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Naghvi. Sayyid Naghvi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
So on different occasions and in different speeches, the leader of Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has addressed the people talking about resistance against the arrogance or istikbar and the arrogant powers. So it seems that this concept, I mean resistance and muqawama, is an Islamic concept, which is very much rooted in the religion of Islam, but unfortunately is not practiced by so many Muslim lands today. So how is it possible to consider America as the big Satan in today's world and not interact with these big power in industry, in economics? You have to be very much rich in terms of your independence, isn't it, Sayyid? Is it possible?
Well, obviously it is possible. Why? Because when we see the dealings that are happening in today's world, especially by the, you know, after the incidents of Ukraine and Russia, what's happening between them?
Yes,
we can see a new power or the business, we can say, like structure has been made in the world. Many countries are thinking to deal in euro rather than in USD dollars, or you know, the China, Russia, Iran. There is, you can say, a unity between them.
The bilateral or trilateral. Yeah, trilateral. Yes.
We have other countries who are also coming into this. Now, this discussion was even before this. Before, we can say, like in 1970s, Ziaul Haq Zulfiqar Ali Bhutto.
Yes.
Was the president of Pakistan. And
the father of Benazir Bhutto, isn't it?
Yes, father of Benazir Bhutto.
Yes, yes.
He joined a Muslim conference that was held between the countries, and there he gave the idea, why not Muslims have their own currency, like as a dinar or dirham or anything, which like the euro that is, you know, being used in the Europe. For the Muslim countries, they should have one currency in which they should deal, rather than having every country have their own currency.
Yes.
And we see, like, after that seminar, like, he attended, after a couple of days, when the days passed, he was hanged.
Yes.
He was arrested behind, like, there was a fake case was made for him. And the guy who they said, like, accused him, like, that he killed that guy, he was alive after his death.
Yes.
So these things are happening. Why is these things are happening? Today we see that U.S., the embassy of U.S., wherever it is, it's playing a role. Especially, you know, 13th of Aban, which is a day which is celebrated in Iran. The student day.
Yes.
When they took over the embassy of the U.S. in Tehran, and they found many documents.
Yes.
And these documents can be found in other embassies as well in the world. Mm-hmm. So when we look at the role of U.S.
Even they have made a movie on that in Hollywood called Argo. And so many Oscars have been won, but unfortunately, most of the, we can say, historians have said that the footage and the videos and the documents that are shown in this movie are fake, you know, and not real.
So basically we can see like these things. Now, for the countries who want to, who do not want U.S. to be, you know, at the front line, obviously they have to change the way of dealing. For example, you should not use the USD dollars in your dealings.
Okay.
The country should get united with each other. The main issue today in the world is that because even in UN, US has the most votes or the power. So it vetoes the things. So when you look at the USA as one party, then you can cope with it. But, you know, when they come to UN, they divide their states or the countries like that they have. And that's how they got veto in the UN.
Yes.
In the UN.
Okay.
This should not be the case.
We should
take US as one country, and it should have only one vote in the UN.
That's right. Is it the kind of jihad to act against the US nowadays? Because we know that besides, for example, Salat and fasting, Saum and Hajj, you know, there have been so many other concepts like acting against oppression. I mean, is the religion of the Muslims incomplete if they do not stay against the U.S. power or any superpower in today's world, Sheikh?
You know, jihad is a very vast and a kind of extended concept.
Yes.
That you cannot limit it into only resistance against, for example, this arrogant power. Because, you know, resistance from the Islamic perspective goes to this main principle of Islam, which is justice. We believe in divine justice. We believe in the justice of the prophets, the leaders, the Muslims. All of them should be just. What does justice mean? Justice means if you fulfill justice, you have to fight against injustice.
Okay.
See?
Yes.
It's very much clear. The jihad is based on this principle of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
that Muslims should fulfill justice. So wherever there is injustice,
yes,
you have to fight.
Yes.
Either it is Soviet Union, let's say the old Britain.
Yes.
I don't know, for example, French, America, yes. Whatever is that.
Yes.
So because this is an Islamic belief that all Muslims believe in and they have to practice it.
Yes.
So that is why up to the time that these powers, this arrogant power, do discrimination or level discrimination against poor nations.
Yes.
These nations have to.
Okay.
They have to, let's say, resist. Otherwise, they could not leave, you know, in this world. This is the point.
Yes.
And, of course, at the same time, they should empower themselves.
Okay.
They should make themselves strong in terms of economy, in terms of politics, in terms of warfare. Otherwise, these arrogant power, these oppressors would not deal in a just way with these nations.
Okay.
That's why if Muslims come to this conclusion that they should empower themselves against this arrogant power, at that time it is the arrogant power that they will do just with regards to these Muslims who are powerful.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think the concept of izzah or dignity comes from the Holy Quran. Quran says that a true Muslim must be aziz, must be respected. So this dignity comes out of this kind of resistance. If Muslims want to be dignified, would be respected in the whole world, they have to be powerful. They have to be strong. And so it cannot be done. It cannot be performed without resistance.
That's all right.
That's why.
Said, the same question for you. Is my religion as a Muslim incomplete if I do not directly state my opposition against the superpowers or not?
Well, obviously, one of the conditions in the Quran which Allah has said is that whatever is wrong, you should declare it as a wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There are different levels. One can do it with his hands.
Yes.
One can say it with the words. The other can have this in the heart. Now, there are these different levels. It depends on the person as well, like where does he stand, and if in his responsibility, is he from the special people who has, who can change the minds of the people, he must speak out. He cannot have these things in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
So there, it depends on the people, like where they stand. Me as a father, for my family, at least I can tell my family what is the reality and what is the arrogance. As a teacher, I should tell my students the truth. As a politician, I should tell my country, the people of my city. As a leader, I should lead the whole nation. So it depends where you stand. So therefore, it's not very easy to answer this question. It depends on the situation. But in all cases, we must declare the satanic power as a satanic powers, and we cannot hide. The reason is that if we do not convey this message, if we do not spread this message, tomorrow my children, our generations can go astray.
Yes.
And that is because I have not said. I just remember of one of the stories about the Prophet Jesus, alayhi salam, that once he was passing from a place which was destroyed, and obviously it was an old, we can say, like city which no more exists. And his companions asked him, like, what happened to this place? And he said there was a punishment from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. There was adab on them. And they said, do you know what happened? So he loudly called, like, can one of you, bi-idhnillah, with the permission of Allah, answer my questions that I have?
Mm-hmm.
So amongst that, those people, one person he raised from one of the graves.
Yes.
And he asked him, what happened to this place? He said, like, we had an oppressor. He was a king, and no one used to think that he's oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Allah has punished us, because we were following him, we were worshiping him. And then he asked, like, why did you answer? You raised up. No other one, like, from the whole nation. He said, I was the only person who in my heart I used to think that he is a wrong person, a wrongdoer. He is an oppressor. But I never said this to the people. I never conveyed this to the other people. That's why when the adab or punishment came, I was also included in the same punishment. So this story tells us that obviously we need to convey the truth to the others if we want to be safe from the punishment, if we want to be safe from the, we can say like, you know, the after effects of the oppression that is happening in the we can say like at the time in which we are living.
Okay. So in this way, reconciliation with the superpowers is impossible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although there are serious reforms, for example, in their behaviors.
Yeah, up to the time that they behave arrogantly, it is impossible. Uh-huh. Okay. If they sometimes come to this point that, okay, we should be just with regards to these
nations.
There's
no issue with the superpower. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's not the main idea. Okay. The main problem is being arrogant.
Yes.
The main problem is when they impose their laws on other countries.
Yes.
When they want to invade either through the culture or through other means.
Yes.
Or physically invade a country. But if they deal everyone with justice as Islam asked and Islam, as Islam says, to deal with everyone with justice, even if they're, you know, in Muslim countries, non-Muslims are living, but we deal with them with justice. So there's no dispute amongst like having a power or not having a power.
That's all right. One of the main slogans of the Islamic Inqilab was "Down with the USA." Do you confirm such a slogan?
Yes. Obviously, we need to condemn those arrogant powers, whatever name they have.
Okay.
We're not dealing with the names.
Yes.
The Israeli Zionist regime. Mm-hmm. Down with Israel.
Okay.
Okay. Down with the U.S. Why don't we say like down with, for example, Afghanistan, for example. Down with Pakistan. Down.
Or Japan. Or Japan. Vietnam.
Or China.
Yes.
Why would? Because they're not arrogant.
Okay.
The point is that wherever you impose, where you invade, where we have seen you being as a terrorist state, then obviously these slogans are right.
That's all right. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Sheikh Rouhani, for your presence in the program Viewpoints. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. For more information and to download for free our previous episodes, visit our website, parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
in the limelight.
The real image of the United States of America, or as the journal Economist called that this United States of America, is seen on the sidewalks of Los Angeles or San Francisco, which are brimmed over with tens of homeless people. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Counterpunch wrote, "One of the six dangerous promises made by Trump should be regain the White House is his plan to deport homeless people from urban centers to tent cities on the periphery. Another word for tent cities is concentration camps. As anyone with a brain can deduce, a Trump team might very well not stop with packing off the homeless to concentration camps. Next could come Black Lives Matter protesters, anyone accused of being Antifa, then all leftists in general, then immigrants. You get the picture. Arranging for forced relocation to tent cities is a slippery slope in fascist hell. Even if it is limited only to the unhoused, it would be an execrable violation of their human rights. So it is to be opposed on all counts. Even more so considering we have available housing for homeless people right now. Just in San Francisco, there are 10 houses sitting empty for every one person sleeping on the street," a San Francisco District 5 Supervisor Dean Preston tweeted on October 13th. "We have the housing, but the homeless can't pay for it. Hello, what about nationalizing it? Or less radically, the government could purchase it at a reasonable rate and then give people who needed shelter. But that involves ditching capitalist shibboleths, and the US rulers are extremely rigid about those." It's time to instill some flexibility in elites, not only regarding housing but also with food. Worldwide, plenty of food is produced, enough to feed everyone. It's just that unfortunate economic and political arrangement dispossessed so many billions that many of them can't afford it. As a result, hundreds of millions of people don't get enough calories each day. That's easy to fix. You just have to decide to do it. And that requires not being a blind capitalist ideologue. In the US, Americans have the novel and uniquely widespread phenomenon of homelessness. People who live in their cars. But with the skyrocketing price of gas, thanks to Biden's idiotic Russia sanctions to bolster his Ukraine proxy war infamy, these poor folk may soon have to trade down from their sedan to a sleeping bag on a city sidewalk. If they do that, they will incur the wrath of the affluent, who consider them a blight on neighborhoods that could otherwise sport eaters with $10 coffees and $30 sandwiches, or expensive gyms, or any other of the commercial ornaments of the districts of the rich. So, not surprisingly, Trump's plan for tent cities is widely approved on the political right in the US. The homeless are so unsightly, you see. Their misery is supposedly their own fault, because they allegedly use drugs and are often falsely accused of not wanting to work. Rightists skip over the inconvenient fact that many, maybe even most of the people sleeping in their cars do work, like whole armies of adjunct professors, but they get paid so pitifully that they can't afford shelter, or right-wingers become hysterical about homeless, being mentally ill, well, provide care. That's not complicated. However, it does cost money. But it's easier to scream that vagabonds are not, the implication being dangerous. The equation of mental illness with violence is pernicious lie, because the most lethal Americans are gun owners, and very few crazy people own guns. They're too busy trying to cope and survive the agony of cohabiting with their internal demons. Whatever the excuse, the wealthy, along with Trump's rapidly fascistic base, which includes many of the nation's police, want the homeless to scram. They want to reclaim U.S. cities are the playgrounds for the rich that they think they were meant to be. Some of the homeless use drugs. Some doubtless sell small quantities of them. A homeless drug dealer? That would be a tougher for the radical right. Vagabond drug dealers, no doubt, would require separate tent camps. They might even get their tent cities blatantly repurposed as death camps. And what starts as an exception for a pariah caste could soon become the norm for the larger group, because when dealing with such a big problem, reactionaries may soon conclude that nothing small will do. After all, there are lots of homeless people in the U.S., officially 500,000, though that statistic is belied by another from the National Center on Family Homelessness, which says 2.5 million children are homeless each year in America. So they have, at a minimum, 3 million unhoused souls in America. Just from casual observation of city life and from the sordid abuse of statistics by American officialdom, is that they have more than 3 million homeless people, maybe millions more. But that's just a hunch based on another manipulated statistic, namely the unemployment one. Since unemployment stats diabolically delete the throng of long-term unemployed people who have given up looking for work, the question naturally arises, how do they live? How do these uncounted jobless, perhaps millions of them, pay rent with no income? Well, they probably don't. There is no charge for sleeping under the stars, and that's about all you can afford it if you are unemployed for years. True. You run the risk of getting beaten up by the police or dying of exposure. And if Trump is reelected, you could be shipped off to a tent city where the first question to arise is, how will you eat? But if you are one of the droves of unnumbered, invisible people who have been unemployed for years, this miserable calculus is all old hat. After all, food and shelter are luxuries for millions of Americans who have been trained by the rigors of austere capitalism to do without the latter and skimp, to put it mildly, on the former. To Trump and his fellow fascists on the GOP right, homeless people are dangerous and deranged. Yet, according to Invisible People, a group that supports the unhoused, homeless people are murdered at a rate 25 times higher than those who have a residence. Indeed, 640 homeless deaths took place in the streets of New York City in 2022 alone. But the homeless are far more likely to be portrayed as perpetrators. That's because they are depicted as a not like us. They are not neat and clean. They don't get to shower every day or sleep in a bed. All these features of vagabondage set off alarm bells on the political right, and they affront the class snobbery of the well-to-do. No fixed address, little bathing. Clearly, these people must be psychotic and threatening. Clearly, they belong out of sight in tent camps. Clearly, respectable people should not be asked to feed them when they are confined in those camps, because clearly they don't have much right to life. They forfeited that when they committed the offense called poverty. The website of Hill wrote, "The typical American experiencing homelessness is often conceived of as a mentally ill individual living in the subways of New York or an addict on the streets of San Francisco or Philadelphia. Those conceptions capture some of the crisis of homelessness, but not all of it. Among the 550,000 to 600,000 people experiencing homelessness in the U.S. are tens of thousands who are not chronically homeless, nor incapacitated due to illness or substance use disorder. These people are capable of work and ready to integrate into the mainstream job market. They're frequently overlooked in the debate on how politicians solve homelessness and also in publicly funded policy solutions."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.